Right, so you may be wondering, what is the basket of thing doing there?
Right, today is actually Harvest Thanksgiving, and it's celebrated more in the services in the nave, right? So it's not some kind of worker topic thing, you know, can't leave it there. So it's very symbolic, but at least just serve as a visual reminder of Harvest Thanksgiving, and I think it's real. Let me try. Oh, it's real. I'm not going to bite, but we can have a feast after this. Of course, we collect all these goodies and we do give them to the homes and the various ministries, people in need that we are serving, just a simple gesture of love. Right. I want to turn your attention to the last chapter of John, one fully read by us just now, right? John chapter 21. And I want to share some thoughts with us. Now, we at the season where the services are coming up with their own sermon series, each service in the cathedral. And by the time we hit November, we will be having Missions Month, and we are together again as a whole cathedral. And then we move in the season of Advent, we'll be together in Epiphany, and then into Lent, Easter, Pentecost. And after that, you're talking about May, June onwards, right until October thereabout, we are back into a sermon series that is designed by the service pastor. So I can let you know where we are heading. But John chapter 21, and most of you, you've been a Christian for a while, you've been reading the Bible, you realize that the Gospel of John, the way it ends, is quite different from the Gospel of Matthew, Mark, and Luke, some often called the Synoptic Gospels. But the fourth Gospel, the Gospel of John, ends in a very different way. Matthew, Mark, and Luke ends with what we commonly call the Great Commission. The disciples being commissioned to bring the Gospel to the world. But John ends with a personal story. John ends with interaction between Jesus and Peter. Peter being restored and Peter being recommissioned to serve. So I also see it as a great commission in a different way. Narrated to us through a dialogue between Jesus and Peter. So quickly, the context. Now, Peter needed to be restored because he has failed miserably. Before his death on the cross, Jesus had predicted and told his disciples that they will all fall away. We know about this from Mark chapter 14, for example. And as always, it was Peter who replied boldly, "Even if all fall away, I will not." And Jesus told him, "I tell you the truth, today, yes, tonight, before the rooster crows twice, you yourself will disown me three times." We have this recorded for us, Mark chapter 14, verse 31, and Peter insisted emphatically, "Even if I have to die with you, I will never disown you." And all the others said, we too. Right? As Peter took the lead, we too. Even Jesus, if you're going to a dangerous situation, we will be there. You can count on us. Bold promises, great declarations, and on the spur of the moment, we often make all kinds of promises. I wonder whether you have sometimes reflect on the things we say. We sing when we come to services. Remember the old hymn, "I surrender all," right? You meet after the service, you know. Even little things, we struggle to be submitted to God, right? Obviously. But of course, in our songs, we often make bold declarations. It's always absolute. It's always not some. You don't say, "I surrender some." You say, "I surrender all." Such is the nature of a pledge. It reminds me of Sarah, my oldest daughter, who had just gone back to London to continue her studies. And she was here for 4 or 5 months, have a great time as a family. But it reminded me of the time when she was a little girl. And we threw away her pillow, which was dirty. But it was her favorite pillow. And when she found out, she was angry. And she boldly declared, "I will never, never sleep again." A few minutes later, she was sound asleep. I can tell you that every day since then, she has slept. And I was told that people grow taller when they sleep. That's how I know, right? And today she is 168 cm tall. And in weight, oh, sorry, I cannot say that. We make bold declaration, right? Very often we can't fulfill them. And I'm sure as you reflect in your own life, we too, like Peter, have very boldly said things that we struggle to fulfill later on in life. So we know that Peter went back on the pledges he made. And on that night, he denied he knew Jesus. Not just once, but three times. So this passage is about the restoration of Peter. And the commission given to him, and therefore to us as a church as well. And I love the story of Peter because we can see ourselves in him. Right? Because we too have failed. Yet, God calls us again to serve His purpose, to serve His cause. So the first thought I want us to remember is that Jesus called Peter to love Him. The call to love Him. And this scene by the lake of the Sea of Tiberias, of course, is a flashback to the Lake of Gennesaret, recorded for us from Luke chapter 5, verses 1 to 11, where Jesus said, "Follow me." But he asked the disciples to follow him, the calling which was first given. And here, in verse 3, we find Peter going back to the lake. And that lake received a calling to follow, and he was following Jesus, following the Lord. And now, in verse 3, we are told he's going out to fish. He's going back to what he was familiar with. And as far as Peter is concerned, he has failed. The vision first birthed in his heart by the lake of Gennesaret in Luke chapter 5 died. That Gethsemane, it died at Golgotha before the cross. Perhaps mostly because of his own response. And when you lose your vision, you return to your past. That's what Peter did. And once again, he did not catch anything for the whole night. And there's a story in itself. I won't go into the details. But you have read how Jesus intervened and the miracle happened. And Peter realized that it is the Lord. That's what how Ray and read for us just now. He didn't just row the boat back, he jumped into the sea as always impetuous, and he jumped into the sea, he swam towards Peter, it's all wet. And then we have, again, the scene of a fire. As Peter was warming himself and being fed breakfast. And you can say perhaps this is the second flashback, because in John chapter 18, verse 18, in the same scene by the fire, while it was cold, and while Peter was warming himself, the servant officials asked Peter, "Do you know Jesus?" And there, Peter denied that he knew the Lord. And so we are told in verse 15, when they finished breakfast, Jesus said to Simon Peter, he asked him a question. "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than this?" The word "this" is a mystery to commentators. In Greek, it can refer to people or things. Perhaps we can never be sure what is this referring to? Because we were not there. We could not see the eyes of Jesus when he said this, or what he was pointing to when he asked Peter this question. Was he looking at the disciples? Do you love me more than them? Was he referring to the miracles? After all, Peter was always excited, right? When his master was doing great things. Was he excited by how exciting it is to follow Jesus? Peter, do you love me more than this? Or is it about work? After all, the scene is about Peter's work. The fish has been hauled in, 153, not small ones, because the net was about to break. So it was the choicest fish, by the way. I'm not sure. Maybe brown color grouper, yellow dot, the most expensive grouper, right? So large choicest fish, right? The nets and so forth, the boats. Was Jesus referring to them? If Jesus is referring to Peter's work, perhaps there's something we can draw some lessons from. The nets, the catch, the very same lake where Peter had returned to. Peter, the fisherman. Now, we live in a modern world. We live in a city, a modern city. And so you have changed. Perhaps just last year alone, you may have changed a few jobs, right? So we don't have a sense of identity. The way we work today is according to what job opportunity may open up to you. You may study as an engineer, you end up being an insurance agent, right? That happens in the city. But in rural areas, in fact, some parts of the world, this is still true. If you are born into your father's fisherman, you're likely to grow up as a fisherman. Your father is a baker, you're a son of a baker. You're likely to end up baking. And so, work, being a fisherman for Peter is about being who he is, you see. Who he's called to. All that he's familiar with. And you can see Jesus saying, do you love me more than this? One or two years ago, a young pastor, and I know him as a man who has a fire heart for God. He's young, very green and very pure in his intentions. And he came to me and said, Pastor Terry, what is your true calling? To be a pastor or to be a chef? It was a trick question because he knew that I'm publishing a book and I have an active blog. And I was looking at his eager face, the zeal, the love for Jesus written all over. And I said, I'm not going to give him an easy answer. So I gave him a very vague, nebulous, ambiguous answer. I said, depends what you mean by the word calling. And it's true that at the latest age of my life, I discovered that I have the gift of cooking. You can say my mother's genes, maybe. I just have a certain aptitude to cook and to teach people how to cook. But I have another calling. God called me to leave behind what I'm good at, to serve His purpose. And I sense Peter was wrestling with that. Because to be a fisherman is to be yourself. Not to make something. To be a chef, I'm being myself. And this can be very egotistical about it, right? It can be something that is very centered on myself. I'm not representing anyone. In fact, in the world of cooking, I'm my own boss. I have no bishop to report to, no colleagues to wrestle with. I do what I want. I can do what I want, actually, literally. The only one that constrains me is God Himself. At the height of my being morphine, the Lord said, I've called you to be a pastor, not a cook. You can carry on doing that, but your first call, I've called you to serve Him, you see. And the second calling to be a pastor is to be a becoming vicarious, to serve not my own cause, to serve not myself, but to serve my master. And I sense there's something in this for us to draw from, right? There's something in this. Sorry, let me just get a bit locked out on my iPad. So my sermon is over. Okay. And so there's something. Sometimes these two callings come together. Right, Sasha plays the piano beautifully, Ime, violinist, singers, and that's a good case in point, right? It comes together. That's where something can be confusion too. Am I serving God or am I serving myself? So musicians go through this. I'm a musician myself for a while, right? I've been serving actively with those in worship ministry, and it's a struggle sometimes. Are we serving our love for ourselves or love for God? So we wrestle with them. But here, Peter is being asked, do you love me more than this? But if you see this as the miracles, the fruits of ministry, I think something too we can draw from. And Jesus is most saying, Peter, you've always been excited about the limelight. When I first called you, I told you I'll make you fishers of men. You're excited about mission, about making your life count, because instead of catching fish, now you're catching men. You're excited about the miracles I've done. You're excited with the fact that I could be the Messiah, the political Messiah to bring in new Israel. And all that dream dash. You saw me hung on the cross. Now, Peter, you've just witnessed another miracle of fish. Peter, do you love me more than this? Before God, the Lord Jesus could entrust the church to Peter, he has to ask Peter this question, do you love me more than this? You recall the letters to the seven churches, right? Last Sunday's speaker writes, I talk about what will God say, what he may say to us. He writes a letter to the church at St. Andrew's Road, right? But the letter to Ephesus, Revelation chapter 2, verses 2 to 4, read to you. I know your works, your toil, and your patient endurance, and how you cannot bear with those who are evil, but have tested those who call themselves apostles and are not, and found them to be false. And I know you are enduring patiently and bearing up for my name's sake, and you have not grown weary. So these are all marks of a good church. You care for right doctrine. You draw out the false prophets. You speak against wrong teaching. Not only that, you have endured a lot of persecution and suffering. But verse 4, but I have this against you, that you have abandoned the love you had at first. Top priority to God. Peter, do you love me? Now, a lot more can be said, but I'll move quickly to my second point. The calling that Peter received to feed my sheep. So, three times, the Lord asked him three times the same question, Simon, son of John. And finally, he said, Simon, son of John, do you love me? And Peter was grieved because he said to him the third time, I would be too. Right? If someone would ask you repeatedly, as if the person is doubting your answer. And said to him, Lord, you know everything. You know my heart. You know that I love you. And Jesus said to him, feed my sheep. Three times he asked Peter for emphasis. There was a black preacher. Whenever as he was preaching, whenever he come to an important point, he would repeat himself three times. So a member was very curious and he came up to him and said, Pastor, why is it? Sometimes in your sermon, when you come to an important point, you repeat yourself three times. this pastor said, first, I tell them what I'm going to tell them. Then, I tell them. And then, I tell them what I've told them. Have you heard, brothers and sisters, the Great Commission in John chapter 21, repeatedly, Jesus is saying, right at the heart, right at the core, if I were to trust the church to you, if I trust fledgling, weak sheep to you, and all that will come along with it, the this, D-H-E-S-C, the qualification is this, do you love me? And of course, this is yet another flashback, as I said, because Peter has denied the Lord Jesus three times. So three times he was asked, feed those who are weak. Peter, in the same way that I fed you physically, having had breakfast, and spiritually, because to welcome somebody into a meal is acceptance, is forgiveness. And Peter was restored, was fed spiritually. A meal of acceptance, a communion he had with Jesus. And Peter knew at this point more than anyone else what it means to be weak, to be unfaithful, to be a failure. And to a broken but restored Peter, Jesus gave him now renewed his call to Peter. Peter, feed my sheep. This will be your work for the rest of your life. Feed the weak. People who will fail you, people who will may betray you, follow me. It's not about glamour, but spiritual power, miraculous events. Peter, you truly love me, feed my sheep. Peter is now being asked to be pastor. Peter. It's amazing when you think about it. How Jesus not only restored Peter, but entrusted him to be the leader of leaders, to lead his church. You see this in the book of Acts. But we have chosen Peter, given his proven character flaw. Probably not, but Jesus did. I came across this story from this book, Three of China's Mighty Men. This story is told of Wang Mingdao. And he was the most renowned Christian figure in China, at least for the last century. And in 1951, as you know, with the rise of communism, many Christians were arrested. And fear dominated the Christian community. And one prominent Christian after another were identified, they were arrested, some were harassed. The press was conducting a public campaign against the church and Christians. And Wang Mingdao, of course, was an obvious target. And he was arrested after preaching his last sermon on the 7th of August, 1955. And the church was closed and sealed. And the world was shocked with this arrest. Wang was released from prison on the 30th of September. That's 53 days later. And he read a statement of public confession. Obviously, he must have said something that allowed him to have early release. And his public confession dismayed the Christian world, discouraged Christians all over the world. And it goes this way. I'm a person, of course, in Chinese, of course. I'm a person guilty of anti-revolutionary deeds. And I'm obliged to the patient education of the government, which made me realize my own mistakes. And yet the government dealt with me genuinely and has delivered me from the gulf of crime. And after his release, Wang was obviously struggling in his own conscience. And he was often heard to go about saying, "I'm Peter." At times he would mutter to himself, "I am Judas." And he could not take it anymore, and finally he informed the authorities that his statement has been made under duress and in no way represented his own true conviction. And he was arrested again. In 1980, after almost 20 years in prison, he was released from prison. And he said this. He sent this message to his prayer supporters throughout the world. He said this: "Very many thanks to all brothers and sisters in the Lord who have been praying for me. Please tell brothers and sisters all over the world that during the 20 years in prison, I've sometimes been like Peter, but never like Judas." I'm sure he must have sounded beautiful in Mandarin. I wish I can say it. "I sometimes been like Peter, but never like Jesus, like Judas." Peter, yo. Judas, mayo. Sounds terrible. I think it's helpful to remember that the early apostles were ordinary people like me and you. I was discussing with a colleague of mine recently, and he was saying, making some criticisms of St. Augustine's teaching. And I told him, he's a big man, he's a big elder in the church, you know, he's a huge church father. And he said, in chatting, he said, "Oh, he's just like you and me." And think about it, that's true. A reminder, flesh and blood, like me and you. So Peter, if you truly love me, then my sheep is safe under your care. It's not that you have to be perfect. It's not that you have to be flawless in your character. If you love me, my sheep will be safe. I always say this, it was Peter's most important ordination question. You know, we set canonical, we call it the canonical exam for ordinance who are preparing to be ordained. And we ask them a whole host of questions. Do you know the 9 articles? Do you know the Lambeth Collectory? What are the 4 instruments of peace? And so forth. It's strange. This is a question men ask to each other, right? But you know, the only question that God will ask us, "Do you love me?" This only question that's truly important and needs to be asked. Perhaps some of you have come into the church seeking to know God. Perhaps you are conscious of your own failures, conscious of your own mistakes, your broken past. And you've been coming to church. You heard it sung about the love of God. And you wonder, are you good enough to come to God? A reminder, as you see in this passage, the love of Jesus drew Peter to himself. To just love him, forgive him, fed him, and not only that, gave him a new purpose and calling in life. And friends, I want to say the same can also happen to you. Thirdly, of course, the call to follow him. And he told Peter, "Truly, truly, I say to you, when you were young, you used to dress yourself and walk wherever you wanted, but when you are old, you will stretch out your hands. Another will dress you and carry you where you do not want to go. This is said to show by what kind of death he was to glorify God." And after saying this, he said to him, "Follow me." Lord, what about this man? Peter asked. pointing to another apostle who could have betrayed Jesus. Of course, it was Judas at that point. Peter thought it was somebody else. And Jesus said this, "If it's my will that remain until I come, what is that to you? You a Christian, definition of Christian is someone who follow Jesus. True? Christian. In other words, Jesus is simply asking Peter to be a Christian. Of course, Peter have other concerns. Lord, what about him? I'm sometimes amazed at how Christians can be so caught up, you know, on our community Facebook in the cathedral. I don't often delete posts and comments, but those irks me the most is when some put out something criticizing another pastor or criticizing another pastor of the Anglican Church or saying this and that about the church. I always wonder, why are we so concerned about the differences in the church? There are some people who are so caught up with this and with that. I know someone who come to the cathedral and said, "Pastor, can I have Holy Communion every day?" Now that's fine. If your spirituality is such that you need Holy Communion every day, I'll give it to you. But first I want to ask you, do you love Jesus more than this? There's some people are deeply in love with revival, right? They grow up the charismatic renewal. And they're always longing for the experience. Then we need to ask ourselves, do you love me more than this? And of course, as you know, of late, there have been pastors. I have a colleague who is now in prisons. I've been told by those in prisons fellowship, he's actually serving God inside there. That's wonderful. Preaching, teaching, share. They can't preach, but doing what they can to for the cause of the gospel. But people, sometimes Christians are so caught up criticizing another church, another pastor. I would say, what is that to you? Right? I call it the WITTY principle, WITTY. What is that to you? As for you, follow me. In the first parish that I was serving, that really broke my heart because there was another brother was serving alongside. We were like, you know, we were Peter and John. We were like good friends, great friends, and we were serving together. And then one day he switched. I want to mention another part of the church that he chose to join. And he was influential. I was struggling because he was influential and a few others were following him. Remember one who was being influenced, being talked to join him to this other part of the church. And this brother said something to you today, I've not forgotten. This person gave this reply and said, "Brother," referring to this brother who have moved on, said, "Brother, I'm very busy following Jesus." That, I think, is a great answer. Because this brother was getting into this, into doctrine, into how the Anglican Church has failed, and this other branch of the church is better, and this and that. It's all so confusing. In the midst of all this confusion, this brother said, "I'm busy following Jesus. I'm in the Anglican Church, not because I'm Anglican, because I'm busy following Jesus." And till today, this brother who said this is still following the Lord and serving. And that brother, sorry, if, as far as I know, today, has left the church. Entirely. Not just the Anglican church, he left the church entirely. Be me point. Is that to you, Peter? As for you, follow me. And Peter, you're bold, you're self-made, you go where you want to go, you want to fish, you return to fishing, and there you are. But one day you will go where you don't want to go. One day you have to stretch out your hands and someone will have to dress you. You have to stretch your hands because someone will dress you.
Dress me.
I've not reached that stage. Yeah. But sometimes my knees hurt. So I ask my wife, "Can you please change my shoes?" Right, but as you get older, your joints, you can't move and someone has to dress you and lead you where you do not want to go. Talk talking about Peter. You had to pay the price. You had to follow me all till the end, and what the end may be. This great statement by Winston Churchill, he said this: there comes a special moment in everyone's life, a moment for which that person was born. The special opportunity when he senses it will fulfill his mission, a mission for which he is uniquely qualified. In that moment, he finds greatness. It is his finest hour. Of course, that was spoken after a few British pilots held back some Nazi planes. He spoke of them. It is his finest hour. And brothers and sisters, Peter's finest hour is not on the day of Pentecost. Finest hour was when he'll be led to be crucified for the Lord. Eusebius, a historian, who said that Peter was crucified upside down. Where he no longer was denying Jesus. Where he would join into what his master has gone through. And that will be his finest hour. His cross death. That will be his finest hour. Now, brothers and sisters, I won't end with this as I conclude. It's so different, isn't it? The Great Commission in John, right? It's so easy to get caught up with Matthew 28 and say, let's change the world, let's transform the world, and actually forget at the heart of it what it's all about. And John brings us back to it. It is about loving Jesus. And brothers and sisters, if you and I, if we love Jesus, if we truly love him, like Peter, like many saints since then, there's no stopping what God can do in and through your life, what God can do in and through my life. This is the most important question. It's not about your qualification. It's not about your experiences, your abilities, or you think, the lack of it. It's this question: how will you answer? Do you love me? Let's pause. I'm going to ask Sasha, the team, to help us with the worship song. Why do we stand? You've been sitting for a while now. Let's stand and let's just... Jesus said, feed my sheep, because he's always acquainted. He always knows deeply the condition of the world. Lost, we are a shepherd. Broken. In need. It's calling you and I to make a difference in their lives. But the heart motivation will always have to be this. And Jesus will ask us again and again, not in condemnation, not to judge us, not to put us down, but to call us back to the center. Do you love me? But some of you have said yes to that question some time ago, but over the years, somehow that has faded, jaded. The amazing thing is the Lord asks again. Once, twice, three, four times. Throughout your life, you keep repeating the question. Annoying sometimes, but so necessary. Do you love me? As we sing this song, we'll give an opportunity for those who come up for prayer. Perhaps some of you are saying, I want to come back to God, or I want to make a stand. You've been attending the Alpha course, and you have heard this morning, if Peter can, so can I. Peter, after all his failure, if God still has a plan for him, maybe God still has a plan for me. And whatever your need may be, perhaps it's a time to rekindle your love for God. Perhaps a calling that you have heard a while ago and somehow you're struggling with it, and you hear the Lord saying this morning, do you love me? The Lord calling you back to what He has called you to be and to do. As we sing this this song, I want to invite you to come forward to be pastors, leaders. We love to pray for you and pray with you. The Holy Spirit is here in a very special way this morning. Don't leave this place. We are allowing the God to just bring the Word of God deeper to your heart and to your life. As we sing this song, as we sing this song together, just make your way forward. We will pray for you.
Every day they pass me by. Hallelujah. I can see it in their eyes. Empty people.